Hey, this is Perry Marshall, and I'm here with Sean D'Souza from psychotactics.com. And I've known of Sean for quite a long time. He's come highly recommended to me by a number of very respectable people. And so finally had a chance to meet Sean, and I attended one of his presentations at the System Seminar just yesterday. As a matter of fact, it was outstanding. And today, Sean and I are talking about pricing strategies and how to increase your prices without losing customers. And Sean has a whole framework for how to do that. So, Sean?
Yeah.
Great to have you here.
Glad to be in Chicago.
Could you tell everybody a little bit about psychotactics and, you know, who you are in the world and what you set out to do with your website?
Well, when I started out, essentially I started out as a cartoonist, and that's what I did. And the reason why I started getting increasingly frustrated was every time I go on vacation. Vacation is a big part of my life. It's holidays. When we in New Zealand call them holidays, but we'll stick to vacation. And it's a big part of my life. And so when I was going back almost 20 years, I used to work for an advertising agency called Leo Burnett, which incidentally is here in Chicago. But I used to work.
It was founded here, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's and it was founded during the Depression, Great Depression. And there's a great story about it, which you probably need to read online. But essentially, I was working for this company, and I used to, as a junior copywriter, and it used to frustrate me a great deal because I had to go and ask my boss for leave. And I thought it was beneath my dignity to ask anyone to take a break. And so I didn't work for very long with any company, but I worked with a few advertising agencies, etc. And then I moved to New Zealand in about the year 2000, and what happened was I'd moved from advertising and copywriting to a different skill. I moved from marketing advertising into cartooning, which was really my first love. And I did that for almost 15 years when I moved to New Zealand. Again, I had the same problem because every time I go on holiday, I'd lose clients. They'd call me up, I wouldn't be there. They call another cartoonist, and then they go, "Oh, you just missed this $5,000 job." And I feel like shit. And so I didn't want to lose work when I was away on vacation, and so I'd take less vacations. And at some point in time, I thought, "This is crazy." I mean, I set up my business so that I could have more control over my life, and here the business was controlling my life. So I decided to study marketing just so I could increase the cartoons. And I found along the way that I actually loved cartoons less than marketing. But at that point, I read a book called Good to Great by Jim Collins. And in Good to Great, Jim asked, "What can you be the best in the world at?" And I actually had to sit down and work out who's the best cartoonist in the world? And I thought it was Calvin and Hobbes. And personally, I couldn't see myself bettering Calvin and Hobbes. So I thought, forget it, I'm going to start up with marketing. And so I did marketing for a while, and essentially...
You must have thought you could do marketing better than anybody else in the world.
Well, yeah, I figured that I could actually keep clients better than anybody else in the world. That's what I started out. But essentially, I started out just so that I could make more money with cartoons. So I didn't. I set out to learn marketing just by mistake.
Hmm.
Even though I'd been in the advertising field. In the advertising field, we weren't encouraged to learn anything about sales or marketing. So we'd have these million-dollar campaigns written by someone like me who had no idea of what makes people buy. And that's what I do with psychotactics. I got very frustrated 20 years ago about not knowing what causes people to buy. And so psychotactics is essentially about that. What causes people to buy? Almost to the point that I put testing to a side. It's almost like I want someone to be able to take two test tubes in a lab and mix the two chemicals together and blow up the lab every single time. It doesn't matter who. I know it sounds bizarre, but that's what we're doing. So at Psychotactics, we're actually learning how people buy, how pricing works, what causes people to stop, issues like attraction, conversion, consumption, a whole bunch of issues. But it boils down to, why do people buy? What's going on in their brain? And that's a science.
And the deeper you get into that, the more you realize that most people don't have any idea what's going on inside the other person's brain. Because even if you ask them, and they tell you what they want, most people don't really know what they want.
At the very superficial level, yes, they don't know. But if we start to really discuss it deeper, and if you go through a process which we've amazingly worked out only 2 weeks ago, we found that there is a process where you can actually find out what people want, but it takes a bit of digging. They won't tell you what they want. For instance, I'll give you an example. If you ask people why they go to Weight Watchers, they'll usually say to lose weight or to have some kind of social network or something like that. The reason why they go to Weight Watchers is to eat food. Yeah, and it sounds funny, but, this is the most obvious thing in the world because it's on their website. It says, eat all the food you want, trademark. It's on their website. In all their videos, it says, diets don't work. In all their advertising, you'll find, people eating cake. People don't pay attention to these factors because they're just looking beyond them. I mean, you look at another good example of the iPod. You ask someone why they buy an iPod, and they always say, because it has, can keep 10,000 songs, it has this click wheel. They'll give you all the reasons. And you look at how iPod's advertising. All the songs are all Coldplay and the Ting Tings and Mary Blige, or Blige, I'm not sure how it's pronounced. I don't have any of that music, but I've got an iPod. All the music is, all the advertising is about bright colors, everything's about teenagers, and yet I'm standing at San Jose Airport a week ago, and there are everyone who's 40 plus, and they've got iPods. So the one factor is once a company works out the one factor, they've got a gold mine there. They've got a massive gold mine because the one factor of iPod has got nothing to do with music. It's got nothing to do with data storage or iTunes or anything. It's just...
What is it?
It's cool.
It's coolness.
Yep. It's just... What they're saying is, if you don't have an iPod, you're not cool. And every teenager on the planet knows that. That's why a teenager will refuse to get a parent... the parents... It's on their wish list. It's right. An iPod.
And they ain't going to take a Sony.
They're not going to take it.
Right.
Because it doesn't... And yet when you ask an adult, did you buy an iPod because it's cool? And they go, no. I wouldn't do such a thing. So customers don't lie to you. They just don't know. But eventually, you can work it out. And as I said, it's a system. There is a way to get to the one factor. It takes a little digging because the customer... So we actually go through a process where we start to ask a whole bunch of questions. And then we list out, the customer just goes on and on. And you say, what do you mean by that? And how... And you're just following that track, really, without leading them on. And at some point in time, somewhere down in that transcript, you've got a list of like 20 things that the customer has said. And then you actually get the customer to list one of the reasons why. And it's bizarre. I mean, we've started up yoga classes where the people didn't want to sweat or do any yoga exercise in the first place. And you would think, surely there's no market for that. Well, there is a market for that. It's amazing what a market there is for it. Most of these people are actually willing to say that they went to a yoga class and are willing to pay a premium for it. So they're willing to pay more to do less or to do nothing. It's a pretty predictable world out there if you know what questions to ask.
So, to this pricing thing, I've become more and more interested in pricing. I can just tell you that when I start out some kind of consultation, like I'll do 30-minute phone consultations with people, and many times one of the very first things I'll ask them about is their product pricing structure, like before we even get into anything else. And that at first that might seem kind of backwards, but it's really a starting point in a lot of ways. So you've got a whole way that you look at pricing. Could you kind of give us the Shun 101?
Yeah, but first I want to preface it with a couple of instances. I want to talk about how a Coke bottle is priced, about how a house is priced, and how really scientific pricing, I mean, how scientific is pricing? First of all, I would suggest you get a dartboard. Put the prices on the dartboard, pick up a dart and throw the darts on it, and that's essentially how you pick the prices. Now, this might seem very unscientific, but pricing essentially is based on no real science. Increasing the price is based on the science. But a starting point of a price is never based on anything. It's very simple. If you look at a house, for instance, a house in your neighborhood, maybe it's $500,000. You go to the seller, and he says it's $500,000. The real estate agent says, "Well, I don't think you'll get more than $495,000 for that." The government or the valuation firm comes up with a $450,000. The buyer says, "I'll give you $400,000." Really motivated buyer says, "I'll buy it for $550,000." Now, this is a piece of chunk of land that has a valuation, and five people have come up with five different prices, even though we've got a history of housing, even though we know the land, we know all the parameters, and yet one thing has, at one specific time in history, one date, has five different prices. And they're not just $50 off. They're like thousands of dollars off. So that's only one example of how stupid pricing is in the first instance. And if you think that there is a science to picking the first price, well, essentially there is no science. There is only a kind of guess. That's why the dartboard. The second thing, and this is very interesting if you go to the supermarket, and you start to look at the Coke bottles. Now, I don't know how much it is here in the United States, but let's supposing you have what? How much is your 150 mils? What's the size of your Coke bottle?
Let's look at this can here.
A 12-ounce can of
12-ounce can, right? Right. 12-ounce can, and then you've got a 2-liter. What do you call that?
2-liter bottle.
Okay, so you've got 2 liters and 12 ounces.
Right.
Look at the price of the 12-ounce, which is sitting there in the fridge. And look at the one that's 2 liters. And you'll find, to your amazement, that the 12-ounce is more expensive than the 2-liter.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the can is $1.50 in the vending machine. And the 2-liter bottle is 99 cents at the supermarket. And the can might even be $1 in the vending machine at the supermarket. Yeah.
So how does that make sense? Coke is Coke is Coke, right?
Apparently not.
Yeah.
Apparently Coke is not Coke is not Coke is not Coke.
That's right. So you can start to see some anomalies, some discrepancies in the whole factor of pricing. And that is that pricing is actually, at the very core, a guessing game. That someone decided, hey,
we could actually have Coke at a higher price, even though it's lesser. And the funny thing is, we don't even notice till someone brings it up. So that's just the background of pricing, so that you know that this is not as fancy a science as you think it is.
Mm.
So where do you start? The question is, where do I start? Well, you always start somewhere. Now, usually this is how the market starts off with pricing. If a can of Coke is $1.50, they'll start off with $1.50. That's usually a very good start, because you want to know, you don't want to price your product in a place where it's so scary for you that you don't feel it's the right price, because your customers will start to feel that quite quickly. You know, you'll get hesitant about saying it when you speak to a customer. You'll get hesitant about putting it on your website. And you don't want to start off in a place that you feel uncomfortable.
So we're stuck. Where do we start? And the starting point is always the same. Start where you're comfortable. It might be that you want to price 10% more than competition, 10% less than competition. It doesn't really matter where you start, as long as you're comfortable. So that's really where you have to start. And let me give you an example. We have a product called the Brain Audit. When we started, I was very uncomfortable. It was a 16-page book, and I didn't know how much to charge for that book. So I started it at $24, which is approximately how much the PDF was at that point in time. And then we increased it to 29, 39, 49, 67, 77, and kept going up that way. But what was interesting was the way that we increased the prices. In the first instance, we actually just increased the prices. So it was 24, we made it 29. 29, 36. There was nothing, there was no science to it. People kept buying it, that was okay. But we didn't know what was the actual price that we could get away with, or rather that the price of the customer was willing to pay. So this is very important, because when you've got tiny little products, it's okay, or tiny little services, okay. When you're dealing with reasonably high priced products or services, it's far more complex, because supposing you've got a service that you want to find out the adequate price or the right price for.
Well,
you could be charging $1,500 when you should be charging $6,000. You could be charging $3,000 when it could be $10,000. How do you know? Well, there's one way. There's hope to hell it works, and that's not a good way. So the other way is to use what I call the yes and yes factor. Now, what is the yes and yes factor? The yes and yes factor is what we put on every single page of our psychotactics sales pages. Is what we always offer customers whenever we're offering them a service, is what people, when they're paying for a workshop, always go through. The yes and yes factor is very simple. It's about choice A and choice B. So every single page has what is not a yes and no factor. Now, most people on any page have a price. You get down to, say, buying something on Amazon, and you have one price.
Right.
And you can choose between the price, or which is yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't have that. We actually have a yes and yes, which is two different prices for the same product. How does this work? Essentially, we have price A, which is a regular product, and price B, which is a premium product. Every single product, every single service, every single training session of ours has a regular and premium. Now, we'll quickly get to why you have to have just two options and not three options, which I know you're in favor of three options, but I'll first describe what the yes and yes is, how to structure it, because if you don't structure it right, you get it horribly wrong.
Okay.
I mean, there are millions of ways to get this wrong, but if you follow this, it has worked for people in Hungary, it's worked people in Japan, in Australia, everywhere, and it's worked not just for selling products and services, but also for different situations, like people signing up for newsletters and giving more information. So various applications. So what is the yes and yes factor? Let's explain it with a cup of coffee. You've got a cup of coffee, that's option A, and you've got a cup of coffee, that's option B.
Now, what's really important for you to understand is the cup of coffee needs to be exactly the same cup of coffee at the very beginning. So what we are going now into is the structure in which you have the yes and yes. Step one is cup of coffee, and premium is cup of coffee. Just bear with me, even though they look exactly the same. The sameness is extremely important.
Hmm.
So cup of coffee, cup of coffee. What's in the cup of coffee? One cup of coffee has cappuccino. Second one has cappuccino. It cannot be mochaccino. You cannot compare a cappuccino with a mochaccino. You're saying, oh, hang on, it's just a cup of coffee. No, it has to be the exact same thing. If you're selling cup of coffee, it has to be cappuccino, and the second one, cappuccino. Got that? So that's step one. We have to be exact in every way. With the first product you're offering, which is the product A, which is the regular, you now put a bonus. Now, you may not recognize the importance of the bonus, but people don't care about your cup of coffee. They buy for the bonus. There's a very good psychological reason for that. When you buy something, like you buy a TV or something, you buy a computer, you've already figured out that you want to buy the computer. And so your mind is now activated to what else can I get with that as an add-on? And that bonus literally causes people to go stop focusing on the main product or service and start looking at the bonus. So when we take these two cups of coffee, we have to recognize that customers are already technically looking for a bonus. So we take the first product, which is a regular product, and we put a bonus there. Then we take the very same bonus and we put it on the second one, which is the premium. So now what we got is one cup of coffee with a bonus, which is like a marshmallow, the second cup of coffee with the exact same marshmallow, same cup of coffee. With me so far?
Okay.
Okay. And this is where it changes. The second cup of coffee now has the same thing as the first one, but we're going to add on a couple more bonuses there. We're going to add one or two bonuses there. So let's say the cup of coffee with a marshmallow, the second cup of coffee with a marshmallow and a muffin. What's really important here is now the customer is looking at the price of the coffee. So the first cup of coffee is $4 with the marshmallow. The second cup of coffee is $4.50 with the marshmallow and the muffin. The muffin by itself costs $2. So what the customer is doing in their brain is they're not thinking of the cup of coffee anymore. They're going $4 for the cup of coffee and the marshmallow, or $6.50 for the second one. And they're going, hang on, I'm getting the $6.50 for $4.50. So the customer has stopped focusing on the price and is now looking at the value. So they're comparing, for the first option, I get a value of $4.50, not price, value of $4. So the first one, I'm getting a value of $4. The second, I'm getting a value of $6.50. And what I'm paying is $4 for the first one, which is exactly what I'm supposed to get. And the second one, I'm getting for $4.50. So I'm getting an additional value of $2 for option B. Now it becomes a no-brainer. So why should I take something that's of less value to me? The human brain cannot comprehend this. It cannot work it out. And so it says, I'm going to take this. It takes option two every single time. Does it take it every single time? Well, what we've done is we have actually tested this as in not testing, but we look at, say, 100 buyers that have bought a specific product, like the brain audit. We sell it at $97.22 and $107.22. So there's a $10 difference between the two. And approximately 99% of the people buy option two.
Hmm.
When we sit in a workshop, we ask people, okay, everyone raise your hand who bought the premium version. And everyone raises their hands. And you go, hang on, your core reason why you were coming to this workshop, traveling all this distance, was because of what reason? Because of, and they always answer, because of the workshop, because of the learning. So with the regular, you get the learning, right? Why did you buy the premium? And that's the first time they start to realize the importance of the bonus. So they're buying because of the bonus, but they always say we're buying it because of the learning. And this is how you need to structure it. So you've got your little grid, like a price box on your page, for instance. You've got option A, coffee, marshmallow. Second one, coffee, marshmallow, muffin. And then you put the value of both of them there. Now, this is what's really important. There are a couple of things that are really important. The bonus cannot be a throwaway thing. Your bonus has to be more valuable, and I'll say this again, more valuable than the product. It needs to be more perceived to be more valuable than the product itself or the service. So yesterday, when I did a presentation here, they were getting a product. They were getting to buy it anyway. But the bonus was, and get this, they were getting the bonus, which was the slides. So they're getting a PDF of the slides. Now, you would say, what's the big deal in that? Well, the presentation was largely visual. It had certain graphs and stuff. And if you listen to it in audio, it would be much harder. So people sitting out there recognized that they would actually need to reference those slides sometime in the future, even as they were listening to the audio. So they were getting the audio anyway, but they wanted that bonus.
Okay.
Three people in that audience yesterday bought the product for the second time because of the bonus. And one of them actually came up to me and said, I felt like a fool buying it the second time. And he said, am I the only one? And I said, no. Three people bought it again, the second time for the bonus. This is the power of the bonus. So you've got to have a bonus that's rock solid, that is so desirable that I must want the bonus more than the product. That's the most important thing. The second thing is, I cannot tell the value of the bonus unless you physically put a price next to it. So if you say three bonuses, hey, here's a marshmallow and here's a muffin, I don't understand that. You actually have to tell me the marshmallow costs 50 cents and the muffin costs $2.50. You have to tell me that.
Mm.
And if you do not tell me that, I do not understand the value and hence I will take the regular.
Mm.
What we do is go even one step further in the yes and yes, and we describe each bonus with a paragraph. So we treat the bonuses as if they were more important than the product itself. And so we explain each bonus in great detail using one or two paragraphs. And as a result, people go, oh, this is really valuable stuff.
Mm.
So what you're actually seeing is just a simple A and B, which is coffee and marshmallow, coffee, marshmallow, muffin. And you can test this in any cafe, or you can test this with your kids, or you can test this with anyone, you will find that people will always choose the one with the greater value, even though they can clearly see one is $97 and another is $107. Logically, they should go for the cheaper one. Logic doesn't work. People buy on value, not on price. If you can get a $500 t-shirt for $200, that's what you want. It's irrelevant that it's $500 and you shouldn't be spending $500 on a t-shirt. That's exactly what people do. I was just the other day in Gilroy and watching this madness go through. Same thing with pricing. There was these Coach bags. I don't know if you ever heard of Coach bags.
Sure.
And they put a barricade and they weren't letting people in. There was like a waiting list to get in on this busy day. And they were giving the bags at a discount. Now, this is the biggest mistake that a lot of people do. They actually start to discount their product. That's like saying my product is 50% crap. You know, that's why I'm going to reduce my prices by 50%. You never have to do that. You always have to. Every bonus has value. You have to bring out the value, explain the value, put a price, and create the entire value so that when a person is looking at option A and option B, they literally have no choice but to choose option B.
So what this is really about is knowing that the person already intends to buy the coffee, you make a switch, and now it's not, because they already were going to buy the coffee, this is how you sell muffins too. Well, is by bundling them with the coffee and showing that they get such a better value by buying the muffin with the coffee that they're almost emotionally forced to take the muffin too.
Yeah, but it's not about selling muffins. It's about selling your product. So, for instance, if you've got, say, an info product or you've got a service, now you've got to understand, supposing you're selling a service and supposing it's a consulting service, one of the things that you could have as a bonus is your private phone number. Now, when you think about it, it's like almost like selling air, selling a nothing. But to the customer, that's a value that they can access you whenever they want to, whenever there's an emergency. So it's not just about selling muffins. You're selling precisely value. So the customer sees that bonus, sees the value of that bonus, and consequently buys something or buys that second option. So it's not, you're not just pushing more stuff in your store. You're not just pushing more stuff off your shelf. You're actually creating the incentive for people to buy with the bonus alone.
And so the first price level exists for the purpose of making the higher price the greater perceived value.
Yes. It's essentially the decoy.
Right.
So whatever price you want, that needs to go on the right, and then you need to have a price that's within about 10% of the other price.
10%?
Yeah.
So it should be 4 and 4.50, not 4 and 8.
That's exactly right. Okay. When it's 4 and 8, they become two different products.
Right.
So what people do is they get greedy, and they start to... So if it's 6,000... then the other one needs to be about 6,500. Once it gets to the 7,500 mark, you're really looking at two completely different products.
Oh, okay.
So you can't have a major diversity. That's why products are priced at 129, 139, 97, 107, 200, 189, 209, 6,000, 6,500, 8,000, 8,500. They have to perceive it as a premium version of the same product. If they perceive it as another product, 8.5 and 10 is not the same thing. They're two different products. They will go for the cheaper one. It needs to be something that's almost an afterthought of a decision, which is, okay, I'll buy this and I don't mind paying a little more. It needs to be a little more. It can't be a lot more. That's a different product.
Right. So, well, so that's, this is really a completely different thing than what I've been talking about when I talk about pricing, because my conversations about pricing have been that, well, you know, I've got my cheapest product is $17 book on Amazon, and my most expensive product is a roundtable membership for about 1,000 times as much money, and there's this 1,000-to-1 spread. Now, my business is not primarily about, you know, the upsell from 17 to 17,000, but it is about the fact that I have a whole ascension process where the $17 product and the $17,000 product are roughly equally sized businesses in the world. This is... So I mean, that's like a really big picture of understanding, okay, so there's the $17 product, and there's the $100 product, and there's the $1,000 product, and they all, you know, they all may generate equal revenues, but that's like a global view. What you're talking about is how to increase the value of a single transaction.
Every single transaction. This is the mistake we made. We actually tried it on our core product, which is the brain audit. So we tried it, and it worked. And it worked, and it worked, and it worked, and it worked, and it worked. Well, technically, what should you do? You should run it across every single product and service. We didn't do that. We
someone nudged us, and so we ran it across a second product. And literally, someone had to bug me. This is a customer who's going to sign up for the program, saying, how come there isn't a premium version of this program? And literally, we were walking away from $20,000, $30,000 a year simply by not having this yes and yes factor in place. That customer, I mean, I should send them perpetual checks because they forced us now to have this grid that we put on every single sales page, that we put in every single proposal, even if it's, you know, a proposal for a service or a training session or anything at all. We now have this as a grid, and you can go to any psychotactics page on the sales page, you'll see this grid. You can be creative with it, but you'll waste your money, you'll waste your time. You literally, and I cannot stress more about how you cannot get away from it. You want to have the same thing. If there's a tick there, you want to have a tick. If there is a whatever is in that grid, you want to copy it exactly, just replacing what's on the left-hand side and what's on the top, which is the name of your products and the details of the bonuses. If you want to be creative, you're going to lose money because we've tested this grid to death, and it works like magic. And as I said, it works across countries and across applications. So it's not just for selling. It's also for getting people to subscribe, to give more information, to do... They've tried this with kids. Do you want the coffee? Do you want the chocolate? Or do you want the chocolate and their stuff? If you want the chocolate and this stuff, then you've got to do your homework. And they do their homework. Right? So it's a psychological thing that you can play with kids, or you can use with your customers. Now, here's the really respectful thing about it, is that the customer has a choice. It's not like you're saying you have to take this, there's no choice. The customer gets the choice between A and B. And here's the even more interesting part about it, is that we're openly talking about this. So if you were to come to my website, you'd already know what you're up against. All our customers at Psychotactics know what they're up against. They all know that there is a two option, A and B. So couldn't they be smart and say, okay, we'll just pull the plug on this one and we'll take A, which is the regular, and not take the premium. Their brain doesn't allow them to do that. So, in fact, the longer the customer has been with us, the more they recognize the value of the premium. And this is why you have to be very careful that you put really good value in the premium bonuses. So you can't just say, okay, I'm going to write a really good sales pitch for the bonus and just throw in anything at all.
Right.
Your bonus must be really valuable. They must not only feel the desire to buy it, but when they buy it, they should scramble towards the bonus. And when they consume the bonus, they should feel this immense, wow, I wonder what the product must be like. Because not only are we talking here about a factor of sales, we're also talking about a factor of consumption. Now, it's like this. You buy an iPod and they give you a bonus of your favorite singer, right? You can buy any, supposing they give you a bonus of 5 songs.
Yeah.
The ability to play those 5 songs, that's the bonus. You bought the iPod, right? They should concentrate on the iPod, but no, they should actually concentrate on the bonus. Because if they gave you those 5 songs and you put those 5 songs on the iPod, you have now consumed a part of the product. And this aids future consumption.
And you've used iTunes. And
that's right. You've gone through the whole process.
Yeah.
Right? And you've used the whole process, and now you're more likely to buy in future.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to recognize that your bonus needs to be a little piece of the big chunk, because that enables customers to eat or consume a little chunk instead of this massive book that you've got, of this massive program. So to give you an example, when we have a training program, for instance, we'll give them 3 bonuses in advance to prepare them for the program. And then they come there really excited about the program. So the bonus is not just a factor of, hey, I'm going to throw this and I'm going to excite someone, but it's also a factor of instigating consumption, of starting the process of consumption. Because if a customer doesn't consume their product, or even a part of your product, then they're unlikely to go forward. They're unlikely to buy more from you. And it's like going to a restaurant, ordering a meal, looking at the meal, and never eating it. What are the chances you'll go back?
Well, there's certainly a lot better if you consumed the whole thing and loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you want the customer to
do. That's right. But you want to start with little bites. Because if you go there to a restaurant and the first thing that you eat, a little piece, the hors d'oeuvres are delicious, guess what? It's just set you up for the main meal. Mm. So the bonus, which is the hors d'oeuvres, can, the restaurant, they're not bonuses, but, you can actually construct the hors d'oeuvres to set the customer in a frame of mind and the need to actually consume the great meal. So there's this great expectation of the main meal, which is your product or service. So here's this complete wrap on things or complete swap on things, which you think, oh my God, I've got the greatest product and service in the world, and I'm telling you, that's crap. I'm telling you, it's the bonus that people are buying, it's the bonus that people are consuming. It's the bonus that you need to focus on. So we started this story in pricing, but we've gone down a completely different path because we have to go down this path. You have to understand that the bonus is what really excites the customer at the attraction phase, at the conversion phase, at the consumption phase. At the attraction phase, they look at it and they go, wow, this is great value. At the conversion phase, they're going, wow, I'm getting this value and now I'm going to get this thing. So they pay for it. That's the conversion phase. And when they consume it, you want to stop the tracks completely. Stop talking about your stupid product and start driving them to the bonus, which is the smaller chunk, so that they can consume that bonus and go, wow. In these 3 or 5 pages or in these 30 seconds or 50 seconds, I have learned so much.
Right.
And it is just awesome. I have to go to the main meal.
Right.
So you're really looking at it from a strategic point of view rather than, oh, let's just throw a price on the product and hope the hell it works. Now, this is just the starting point where you create the price grid. How do you increase prices without losing customers? Well, it's pretty simple, actually. Let's assume your regular was $10 and your premium was
$11,
because it was 10%. Okay? You can go to $12. That's okay. So $10, $12.
Okay.
Here's what happens. You watch for a while. Watch for 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. As long as you feel comfortable. You are the person that's the seller. You're the person. So feel comfortable. Feel comfortable that you're selling at a good price, and then watch how many people buy the 12. If you've constructed this well and it works across the board, you'll find that 95 to 98% of the people buy it at $12. So here's what happens. Shift the $12 to the left. You remember where the $10 was? Well, the $10 product gets booted out.
Okay.
And you move the $12 to the left-hand side. So now you have a $12 and a $15 product.
Okay.
And then you watch how many people buy the $15. Again, you after 2 or 3 months, you see, heck, everyone's buying the $15 one. The $12 gets removed, and now it's a $15 and $20 product.
But you're not changing them.
You're not changing the product. You're only changing the prices.
Okay.
Okay? No product change. We've done this with a product which went from $7 to $11 to $17, $27, $37, $57, $67, $117, $177, $209. That's in that scale. That's where that product is sitting right now. From $7 to $209.
Hmm.
That's the jump that people have made, and we've not seen a single loss or percentage loss in customers. Same number of customers buying. So that's one thing. We've seen this with tiny products. We've seen this with products like that are selling at close to $10,000. And same thing. We started out at $1,500, went to $3,000, went to $5,000, went to $8,000, $8,500, and now it's at $10,000. And it's the same sequence, tiny product, big product, doesn't matter.
Mm.
What's really important is how you describe the whole, how you create the whole grid, how you describe the bonuses, and then how you get the customer to consume those bonuses on the other end.
that, in a nutshell, is how you can increase your prices. So you as soon as you feel comfortable, 2-3 months, put it in your diary to check after 3 months. You know, don't stress about it. You feel comfortable, move it up. And at some point, you'll see some price resistance. We haven't actually got to a price resistance yet on any product.
No, that seems like it would only work on a product that's not easily directly compared to other products.
That's right.
It needs to be unique in order for this to work.
Let's supposing you were selling
coffee.
Yeah, so, there are certain things that would probably, I mean, you probably
would
struggle.
Can we go from 4 to 6, from 6 to 8, from 8 to 10, from 10 to 12?
There is going to be a price resistance on certain products, and it depends on how often you use them as well. On a bed, we could do that. Even though it were easily available with every retailer in the city, we could do that because it's not used as often. I'll explain to you how. With a consumable like coffee, which is used quite often, you're probably going to struggle to get to $15 for coffee. Admittedly, coffee used to be available for $1 before Starbucks came along. Mm-hmm. We're now used to $5.50. No one in their wildest imagination thought that you could get a coffee for $5.50. So when people say that you can't sell the cup of coffee for $8, they're probably off their heads, because Starbucks proved that you could with the right incentive. Now everyone's coffee is $4 or $5. What happened? Did the coffee get better? Not really. I mean, you still get crappy coffee. So essentially, if you've got to have the guts to do that, and that's very unscientific. You probably be able to get away with it, but if it's often consumed, people will feel the pinch of it. We're really dealing here with products that are not being bought on a daily, weekly basis, because you can't buy bread or coffee or stuff like that. But if you're buying a watch, even though it's available with every retailer in town, you could start to put some bonuses there which are extreme value. So for instance, there was a conference here in the United States, and people who were coming there were from YEO, which is the Young Entrepreneurs Organization. Mm-hmm. Now, these guys are not... Essentially, you have to be earning over $1 million to get into the organization.
Yeah.
So these are not pocket change people. You know, some of them fly in with their Learjets and stuff.
Right.
How do you actually incentivize them? You know, they were going to speak to... they were going to go to a conference where they had people like Jay Abraham speaking and some big shots in marketing and the industry giants like, say, Google or whatever. I'm just giving you an indication of the kind of speakers that were there. Okay, so it's a big deal. What's the bonus you can give them? Well, the bonus was they got a visit to the Playboy Mansion. And they had a fixed date by which they had to sign up, and guess what happens? So, but does that solve the problem of a bed, for instance? Now, as I said, if it's going to be a product that's used on a regular basis, like toothpaste or coffee or whatever, this is a tricky position to be in. But if you're going to sell a bed, and let's say there are 50 or 500 bed retailers in the city, well, eventually the person is still buying on the basis of the value that they're getting. So when we were working with a bed company, we actually threw in massage sessions. So strategic alliances came into play, literally.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so we said, okay, you get...
buy a bed and get a massage.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Okay, so the bonuses were linked to, you know, chiropractor sessions, massage sessions, a discount at a health store, pillows, stuff like that. So when the customer's buying the bed, they've stopped looking at the bed now. Because if they go next door to your competitor, guess what they get? For $5,000 worth of bed, they get $5,000 worth of bed. They buy $5,000 worth of bed from you, and they're getting $6,000 worth of stuff. So, you don't have to charge $6,000. Here, your option is option A, $5,000 for the bed, or $5,250 with all these goodies. Well, I mean, do the math in your brain. Is your brain going, all these goodies are worth $600. I'm getting it for $200. And if it's valuable, if you've constructed the bonus in the right way, the brain doesn't have much of an option. It doesn't. I mean, look at it this way, right? You, supposing you were to get on a plane today and you were to fly somewhere, and they were to say to you, okay, for... And they do this on planes now. I mean, in New Zealand, we have premium economy and economy. And what is that but a yes and yes? Mm. I mean, it's not business class. Let's get this right. It's not business class. It is a space of 9 or 10 seats in the plane segregated by curtains. You get a little more leg space. That's what you get. And you probably get a little better food. I don't know what's happening behind those curtains.
But it's like a couple of dollars worth of stuff.
Yeah, but they charge more.
Right.
So they've just put a little more space, and they're charging you like $200 more. And people see value. It's always full, by the way. Premium economy is always full.
Mm.
So you can... There are different ways to go about this stuff, and essentially you can make a lot of excuses why it doesn't work for your industry, your business, your... You know, I used to be in the cartoon business, and if there's any kind of business that's real weird... That's the weirdest of them all, you know, cartooning. So.
That's a weird business.
Yeah. I mean, and so you can make the excuses, or you can say, well, how am I going to do this, and find out how you can do this. Just to sum up what we've done, essentially, pricing is random. Pricing is not a factor of, hey, there is a fixed price on anything. All prices based on value. Your house, you can sell your house tomorrow. And if you've got a cherry tree that the customer wants, the house is no longer worth anything. It's a cherry tree that they're buying.
Yes.
You've got to recognize that.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
So when you're selling a house, if you're just like another real estate agent who's a dope who's just listing the house, then, you know...
Most real estate agents are dopes, by the way.
Yeah. So you know, it's... You've got to recognize what's the value that you're throwing in with the house. And it might be the... flooring or something, you have to bring out that. So you've got to recognize that even when a product seems to have a fixed price, it has 5 different prices.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that you have to construct a yes and yes factor, because a yes and yes factor enables you to get between 10 to 20% more income every year simply by you adding on the bonuses. The bonuses are the most important thing of all. First of all, you have to recognize it's the bonuses that cause the attraction, the bonuses that cause the people to click, give you a credit card, and the bonuses are the first thing that people need to be highlighted so that they can go there, consume the bonuses, and then go to the main meal. So it's actually the other way around. The bonus shouldn't be an afterthought. It should be the pre-meal stuff.
Well, you know, this kind of makes me think of... bought a house a couple years ago, and what sold me on the house was the space that is now my office, which was it's on the second floor, and at one time it was probably a screened porch, but then they closed it in and made it a solarium or something. So it's got windows on all three sides and a wooden floor. Now, it's 10 by 19, but it's got windows all around, and it's very bright, and it's got another room next to it, which is a library. And so that room's, maybe 14 by 14, so like 300 square feet sold me the whole house.
That's right.
And I didn't really care about the rest of it.
Exactly right.
It's like, tell my wife, you can have everything else, whatever you want to do. This is mine.
and I bought the Mac. I've got PCs, and I've been hankering for a Mac for a while. But I've got more PCs than I know what to do with. But I bought the Mac, and this is the interesting part about a bonus. You can actually buy the bonus. You know, you can. I mean, we're actually going to a completely different domain, but let me tell you my experience. I bought the Mac because of the presentation software that's on the Mac. So I looked at it somewhere, and I go, this is awesome presentation software, which is... what's the name of the presentation? See, I can't even remember the name of the damn thing. But I bought it because of that. I bought the Mac because of the presentation software. And this is what people do. They buy the bonus before they buy the product. Your product is just something that's there.
Your service is just something that's there.
So would it be useful then for people to look at their product and go, okay, I've been believing that people bought my product because of the product, but let's say Sean and Perry are right. Perry buys the house because of the office, and Sean buys the Mac because of the presentation software. So maybe most or all of my customers actually bought my product because of this one thingy. So what is the thingy? And it might be different thingies for different people. There might be a whole pie chart of what it actually was for different people, right? But it was the small thing, not the big thing.
Yeah, but it wasn't just a small. It's the most desirable thing.
Right, it's the most desirable small thing.
Yeah.
But see, this is really 80-20. This is the insignificant majority versus the significant minority.
Yeah.
And so you're saying it's always the smaller part that drives the whole sale. Sometimes when I talk about Glenn Livingston's research, he talks about how when you sell a product that there are certain things that are like minimum requirements, like all cars have to have four wheels.
Yeah. Yep.
And nobody's going to buy a car if it doesn't have wheels on it. But what gets the person to buy the Acura Integra is actually because it's got an iPod docking station in the stereo, and they couldn't find any other car with an iPod docking station built in. So that's why they bought the Acura instead of the Infiniti.
That's exactly right.
Right.
And that's how we bought. And that's
your whole pricing strategy right there.
Yep. And as I said, you can systematically increase the prices when you're comfortable. Put it in your diary, and you can every 3 months increase the prices, and you'll see the results will speak for themselves. And if you find that there's a price resistance, stop there, and you're done with the pricing. Hmm. But there's a science to it. You don't have to lose your customers, because you can see, you can track it on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, depending on how much you sell of that product or service, and you can start to see. And that's how we increased our prices. I mean, I'd still be selling stuff at $1,500, and I'm selling it at close to $10,000. And a customer had to tell me this. They said, you're underpriced.
Yeah.
Okay? And so, of course, after they bought the product, they told me that, but it just tells you that. So that's the whole story of pricing in a nutshell.
Cool. So where can people go to get more of Sean D'Souza?
Psychotactics.com. I can spell it out for you if you want.
Psychotactics. I think people can spell
that. Yeah. Or just look for Sean D'Souza on Google and you'll find Psychotactics.
All right.
Or Google will spell it out for you.
Well, that's great. This has been very interesting. Some things I need to go home to my office and try. And thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. Been a pleasure.